empty chair.
Yeah. We'll talk
to you. He's quickly running down to M-Wave. He goes, oh, God. Maybe they won't notice.
Got to get a motherboard and CPU. Right.
Well, he can use Flux. He can make his own motherboards now. How hard could that be?
Can't be hard, surely.
Yeah, Gigabyte's been doing a bad job of it for years.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 19 for Friday, the 20th of June, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, Amazon is spending some coin in Australia. Android 16 is out. Google breaks the internet. Plus, GCP will be helping out OpenAI. What? But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I'm not here. Go away.
You are here. You're probably freezing, though, I can tell.
Yeah, it's a little cold, and I'm taking a little bit of thaw out this morning.
Plus our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
Oh, I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good.
Not as cold.
Yeah.
Far further north.
Yeah, I tell you what, that cold snap's really come in and just kicked us in the butt, hasn't it?
Yeah, I kind of love when winter finally turns up.
Winter is here.
No, it was last week. We're done now.
Oh, yeah, you've had yours?
Yeah, we've had our two days.
Heading back to the warm weather now?
Yeah, we've had our 2 days of winter. We're back into warm weather now.
What have you guys been up to during the fortnight?
Look, I've been doing a lot of wiring on the caravan and getting ready for our trip. So, because we leave on Sunday for 3 weeks on the road, we're heading out to Birdsville and Winton and a whole heap of other cool places out western Queensland. So I had to wire in our Starlink properly into the 12-volt system. So I've wired that all in. And then we've got one of those blackjack electric trailer jacks on the instead of a jockey wheel on the front of the caravan.
Oh, yeah. Is that the remote control one that you can just stand back and...
Well, ours isn't remote control. It's just a button. That you push and it jacks it up and down. It's got a little light there and everything.
Yep.
So yeah, I put all that together and wired all that in with fuses and everything. And I had a bit of an issue. So I pulled the batteries out of the van so that I could get into the area that we're wiring. And I went to put them back in. I was like, oh, I'll just check the voltage on them first. I pull the multimeter out and I turn it to volts DC. And I test it, and there's nothing. I'm like, oh, no. What's going on here? Have these things gone flat somehow? So anyway, I'm like, oh, okay. And I check them again just to make sure that I'm not completely lost the plot. And it's showing 0.02 volts. I'm like, this is not good. Righto. I don't have a lithium jump starter. So off I trot down to Maroochydore to buy a lithium jump starter. Come all the way back up, put the jump starter on them for a few seconds because that's how you wake up the BMS, like the battery management system on it, and test it again, 0.04 volts. And I'm like, uh-oh, I don't have any way to charge these things. And I like freaking out because there's $700 or $800 worth of batteries there and going, we're 3 days away from leaving and we're not going to have any batteries. This is bad. Until I got out there yesterday and realized that my multimeter had the probe plugged into the amp reading socket and not the voltage reading socket. There's nothing wrong with the batteries. The issue was 100% PEBCAC.
Well, at least you've got your lithium jump starter now.
Yeah, right? That's right. Toy. Yes, and I can say that I'm probably being guilty of that at least once as well.
I just can't believe that I did it and that it took so long for it to register in my head that, yeah. Hey, hang on, check the leads on the multimeter.
It's in the right outlet, yeah.
Yeah. It's something I've been doing for years and I just didn't do it this time.
I'll tell you what, I picked up one time. It was one of those, you know, you're flicking through Facebook and a random ad comes up for something. And it was like $25. It's like a micrometer, a micro multimeter,
It's auto detects. So you put it on current, it knows you're doing a current. Well, there's a button between current and voltage, but it auto detects continuity, voltage range. It kind of, and it's small. It's like this big, right? And
did you bring that on our trip up north?
No, I got it since then. No. I got it since then, but it's perfect because you can just throw it in your kit bag, and you don't have to carry the big bulky multimeter around.
Maybe you showed it to me on a different video because I'm sure I've seen that before, and I'm sure I've heard about it. But yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah,
it certainly beats my old school multimeter where you got to change the ka-chunker on it.
The big ka-chunker, yeah. Well, there's a vibe to those old men. Is the big analog ones with the analog meter?
I've still got my original one that I was using when I was doing lining work at Telstra.
Yeah, they're great.
Yep.
In the Bakelite case.
Yep. Yeah, fantastic bit of kit.
Yeah. Dave,
I'm glad you've got that going, and you're going to be on the road soon. So we'll miss you next fortnight.
You'll be like, "Oh, he's gone. Thank God for that."
But at least I don't have to do quite as much work as when Banky went away. Like,
yep,
just a little bit.
Nothing
too exciting on my side. I've just picked up, sort of replaced my laptop, end of financial year stuff. So there was a bit of, migrating that across, but that, nothing too out of the ordinary there, except that I managed to kill one of the DIMMs.
what did you end up getting?
I'm a big fan of using, ex-government lease laptops. So I use there's a couple of different companies. I got this one through Australian Computer Traders. So it's like a 3-year-old Dell, Latitude 15.6 inch thing. So it's nice. I needed to get a machine that that actually had a full size numpad. I do enough math operation that not having it is too annoying.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit that way these days.
Yeah.
Sitting in my ob for hours on end and...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I did that. Picked up a new Unify 10 gig switch. There's a new smaller one. It's a 8-port XG that, has like PoE++ on the ports, has two 10 gig SFP ports on it, but also eight 10 gig standard Ethernet jacks on it as well. So needed that because I need to make some mounts for it. So that sort of come in. I had to get that gray imported because they won't be in Australia for a while.
Yeah, right.
That'll keep me busy for a bit making some new designs. Oh, I did. I also did one for the new, the NBN cable modems because, in September, NBN is upgrading all the plans.
To 2.5,
Yeah. So you need new modems. The HFC ones have started to roll out to people. Like if you move house now, you'll get one of these new modems. And they're a bit of a funky design. So I finally managed to get someone to send me one.
Yeah, nice.
Most customers would be like, "Hey, can you make a mount for this thing?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, but it's kind of weird. I really need it in my hand. I need to be able to measure it and prototype. It's like, I can't, it's not a rectangle, right? I can't just take external dimension." One customer was like, "Oh, yeah, one turned up DOA. So they've sent me another one." So he sent me the dead one.
Perfect. Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah. So, that's the new cable modems. And I'll be doing the fiber ones when I can get my hands on it.
Right. I might be in the market for one of those when the time comes.
Yep. Yeah, boy.
When we finally get fiber to the premises here, it'll be, 2.5 straight away.
Yeah, nice. For sure.
Yeah.
That's me. How about you, Banky?
Not a great deal. I did go through the exercise of, and this is so mundane. you guys have got garages, right? I got a garage, and you've probably got a box full of screws and nuts, and then another box full of screws and nuts, and then another box full of odd random stuff, and then this box and that box and whatever. I bet you got that, right? Well, I took all of those random boxes, tipped them all out on the desk, and sorted them all out. that's been my fortnight. So well, now I have this lovely organized thing, and I can immediately find what I want. It's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever seen Adam Savage's Tested show when he's like building stuff. And he goes to the wall and he goes, oh, I've got those. Bang, and he pulls them out and he's immediately got it. That's what it's like now. It's so beautiful. Yeah, nice. It's a thing of beauty.
I did a bit of reorganization in my shed the other weekend because it was just – there's just stuff piled up on all my workbenches and it was just giving me the willies.
Yep.
So I did a big clean out in there and it took me, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours to do it. But it was done and it's like, oh, I've got bench space again. This is so nice.
Yep.
And then I noticed the other day, like, my little brother had walked in there and he just dumped something on my bench. I'm like, get this off my bench now.
Exactly.
What I love about doing that kind of work, though, is, yes, you're making a change in the physical world, but I find that it takes something out of my brain as well. Mm. It's like I feel like I'm more capable now. There's like a couple of extra cycles. There was something in my head that was like, I needed to store that this was in that box, this was in that box, this is underneath this pile on the bench over here, and now it's sorted. My brain can just dump all that cash.
Yeah. Clears that space out, and you've got a system where you know you can immediately find what you need. You don't need to commit it all to memory where everything is, or go hunting for it, you know. So that was that. Yeah, I mean, that's nice. And besides that, during the week, I went and sat a certification.
Just another one.
Yeah, this time it was a security pro, and I passed. So,
well done. Of course you did.
Of course I did, yes. Wow, what? They're like chalk and cheese. That one was so much easier than the network professional. 50 questions. They hadn't revved it since the last exam. And, in fact, when I was doing my study for it, I kind of crammed on the weekend before, on the Saturday and Sunday. And I'm going through the sample questions and I'm thinking, this all seems very familiar. And then sure enough, yeah, when I set the exam, it was the same questions. And I knocked it over in about an hour. And then another 15 minutes just to go through and review the questions. There are a couple of oddball questions I'm still not real clear on. They're so obscure, I can't even really remember what the question was. I did change a couple of answers there and ended up passing anyway. So
nice.
Yeah. One of the easier ones, I would say, this security cert. You really only got to understand a few concepts. The least privileged and folder inheritance, you know, hierarchical inheritance. They're really the main two concepts they keep driving. And if you understand that, then you'll get most of the questions, really.
So is there not much in it about, like, any of the, like, the security tooling and things that's come in, like post-Mandiant?
Network Security Center. Well, here's the thing. When you get a question that has three obviously oddball answers and then one question has got something in it about Network Security Center or artifact registry or binary authorization, that's the one you pick.
Pick the most obvious answer.
Because it's got the Google product in the answer.
In the name.
One you pick, right?
That's all right, cool. Well, I mean, now that you've done that, I think you should take a minute. Go off and do that new GenAI cert because I hear that Meta is paying the big dollary dues for AI professionals.
$10 million
packages plus.
I read this yesterday. It popped up in my Google feed. I read this yesterday and I was just like, whoa. I want to go and do AI now.
You want to be one of like the top 50 people on the planet. I'm sorry, Ian. It might be a little bit too late for your beautiful mind journey to.
Exactly.
However, so it's like Zuck is opening his wallet. I mean, besides this article, I saw a few people referring to like potentially a couple of the top flyers might be getting like $100 million packages.
Boy.
Wowzers. That's a lot of coin.
Meta is desperately trying to make up some ground.
Yeah. And isn't it ironic that it was their model that was the one that was leaked to the public source, open source to the public, and that's really what kicked off this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it's very interesting. That,
but no, I won't be doing an AI cert because I've got the DevOps cert to sit next month. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell Zuck that you're not ready to come on board yet.
He'll have to wait until August.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Speaking of AI, yes. Banky's shown us this magic bit of kit.
Flux AI. You can basically build PCB designs using AI. And my mind was blown when I saw this.
Yeah, because it's called hardware for a reason. It's not easy to do.
No.
And this is, I was just looking at the demo of it and what it can actually do. And this is phenomenal. Like, you can import all your footprints, which are the actual size and pin layout and all that sort of stuff for the components, in from open source tooling like KiCad or the likes. And this will actually do your circuit connections and all that sort of stuff, and then it auto-lays out your boards.
Yep.
Because there's a difference between drawing a schematic and actually laying out a board. Laying out a board is arguably much, much harder than doing the actual design of the circuit.
Yeah,
because you've got to get all the traces.
You've got to get the traces all in the right spot, and inevitably something will start crossing over and you've got to sort of drag bits all around the place. But this thing does auto layout for you.
Does it for you, yeah.
And I was just, holy crap, like this is it. If it comes to hardware design, this is it.
This is it. And will it do multi-layer or the two-layer PCBs as well? Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's insane.
You just give it the circuit and bang, you've got your PCB layout. And then I assume it spits out the file and then you just give it the PCB away and they print it and send it back. You know, well, okay, yep. Done.
Yeah. So they've called their AI tool Copilot. Reasons.
Do they say what model they use? I don't know.
No, I haven't. I didn't find it in there at all. I haven't. I skimmed through the docs and the intro about what it is, but it didn't tell me what actual model it's using.
Yeah. It'll do firmware development as well, which is cool.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, complete hardware solutions from top to bottom.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, link in the show notes. Check this out. Like, it's just...
You guys want to get into the hardware product business?
No. This is well, I'm you know, I'd like to. It's just time, right? But this is going to accelerate so many open source projects and, you know, homebrew projects that, it's going to be great to see.
Yeah. I mean, it costs money for every different edition. There's no sort of free edition unless you're doing an open source project, in which case they do offer, I think I read that they offered like the Teams version for free.
Yeah. Yeah, still $15 a month for the starter pack.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not disastrous.
If it was your thing and you were, you know, you wanted to do it, then that's nothing really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I pay probably close to, I think, $80 for my CAD software. So, you want to do something for business?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, for if business, it's making your money, even as a hobby, $15 a month is nothing really.
Yeah. I spend a lot more than that on my hobbies.
Exactly, yeah.
A lot more than that.
So go check that out. But M-Wave.
Oh, no.
I'm still getting hit with M-Wave ads on YouTube.
Well, okay, so M-Wave's parent company went into administration. So M-Wave is still trading. They've now been acquired by DigiDirect. So the good news is that all, like, M-Wave's, like, staff have been told that they're still going to keep their roles. Yes. All the stores are staying open. Loyalty programs are in place.
Yeah, anyway, that's right. Everything stays in place. All the rewards stay in place. The staff stay in place. I guess, are they going to keep it as a brand as well? Because it's kind of got a bit of a niche market, right?
I mean, yeah, I would expect them to. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen, like, I don't even know if DigiDirect has their own stores. I've never heard of them. I think they're just like a conglomeration.
Okay, this is more like a sort of JB Hi-Fi vibe from DigiDirect. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I was just reading a little further. I didn't see this on my initial read through. Do you remember Booktopia?
Oh, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, well, Booktopia went into administration like 2 years ago and went away. But it's back because DigiDirect purchased it.
Right.
So obviously they're building up a stable.
What's this about Gemini and a bunch of new announcements from Google?
Oh, yeah. So I got an email during the week. So obviously I get some advance notice of things. But Gemini 2.5 Flash and Pro are now GA.
Nice.
Supervised fine-tuning for Gemini 2.5 Flash is now GA. Gemini 2.5 Flash Lite is now in public preview. And the new updated live API with native audio is also public preview. And that one's the one that interests me because that's the streamlining the development of complex real-time audio AI systems to give you more natural and responsive voice-driven applications.
Right. Don't we kind of have that, though? Isn't Gemini on your phone doing that now? You speak to it and it speaks back?
This is a better one.
This is a better one, okay.
It's betterer.
Of course. More better is a better.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. All right.
There was a really cool announcement that came out. And it sort of ties into another article that we've got down in security that we'll go through a little bit later that sort of got to do with AI as well. But
All right, so new updates from Gemini. And then we've got, just before we get on to the main items, we've got MS Copilot leak.
Yeah, so this one just sort of dropped into my mailbox yesterday afternoon, and I was like, wow, we've got to cover this. So this is the first known zero-click AI exploit. So it's a Microsoft 365 Copilot. They call it Echo Leak. And there's a security researchers at a firm by the name of AIM Security. Have found this flaw and how to exfiltrate private data out of a user's Microsoft 365 tenant, I think they call them. We call them orgs in GCP.
Yeah.
And it allows an attacker to automatically exfiltrate sensitive and potentially proprietary information from Copilot without the user's awareness. So it uses there's a number of different layers to this attack, but it's essentially, it uses XPIA bypass, so Microsoft's filtering in their AI is known as XPIA classifiers, and that's they use to identify malicious prompts. And so what they do is write an email that's written in plain, non-technical language that sounds like it's intended for a human, but it's really not. And then they use link redaction bypass, which typically links to external sites are removed. However, they've discovered a markdown link trick that circumvents that redaction. And then the image trick. So Copilot can be tricked into generating images that links that trigger automatic browser requests. So sending data to the attacker without user clicks. And then CSP bypass via Microsoft services. So this is that final layer of it. And although Microsoft, it says here, has security rules in place to block outside images, attackers have found ways to route data through Microsoft Teams and SharePoint, which are allowed domains.
Whoa.
So it's a pretty complex attack, but
I don't even understand what's going on here, but this is complex.
yeah, it's complex. Having said that, once you've got access to that, you have access to a huge range of business data in that tenant. You're looking at emails and OneDrive and Teams and SharePoint and
so what are you doing? You're attacking
Copilot.
Copilot in that tenant?
Yeah.
Right. And then Copilot has carte blanche access to everything in that tenant then.
Yep.
Right. So you've still got to get into you've got to be in the tenant first, right?
No, you've just got to send an email to someone in the tenant. Microsoft have fixed this, right? They've already given it to CVE, and they've described it as AI command injection in Microsoft 365 Copilot allows an unauthorized attacker to disclose information over a network. The CVE is there, so you can read all about it.
Mm.
But it's rated as critical with a score of 9.3, which
wow.
is huge. That's
yeah.
it's bad. And Microsoft has said that the vulnerability has already been fully mitigated.
Yeah. Because it's all cloud-based stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why does it not surprise me that it's Microsoft that's got the first vulnerability?
You know, Copilot's built on OpenAI. Maybe that's why Google wants to help them.
maybe. Very interesting. All right. Well, we'll keep our ear to the ground and see if any others. I mean, if Gemini has such a vulnerability as well, I bet you people are hacking at it for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And then finally, we've got VCF9.
Yeah, so just launched yesterday. So this is VMware Cloud Foundation 9. So this is vSphere 9, updated NSX, all of the whole product stack got its uplift. So, you know, this has been in beta for a little while, but this is the actual GA release yesterday morning. So that's pretty exciting. There's some pretty cool features that are coming in there. And I know we like to rag on Broadcom and stuff, but it's still exciting when there's new new vSphere versions.
Well, we only rag on them when they do dumb things.
Well, this is not a dumb thing. This is something with some pretty cool stuff. There's one I was we'll drop the sort of release blog in here at the end, but there's a couple of really nice new features in there. One that takes me back a little bit to, do you remember, was it Vista when it was like you can plug a USB drive in and then it can do page files to it? It was a memory boost thing, and then you could pull the USB drive out and just
the
completely crash your
memory.
Yeah, but it was faster than your spinning Rust.
At the time, 1.1.
Yeah. So there is now advanced memory tiering. So if you've got a particularly large cluster, and you know you'd have to put a lot of RAM to cover your various workloads, now it can do tiering for their pages. So you can put the stuff that's in memory but not actually really being accessed that often, and it can drop it from RAM down to NVMe.
Nice.
Right, and moving things around. So that's pretty cool.
Sounds a lot nice like a page file to me. But anyway.
Yeah, well, it is a page file, right? Like, it's exactly that. It's just obviously it's going to be quick NVMe, but nothing's good as RAM.
Yeah, I mean, it's an order of magnitude slower, but it's still not USB 1.1 flash
for sure.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not running down all the way to the storage layer.
No.
So this is much more for things that are in memory but less frequently used pages. So that's pretty cool. There is a bunch of stuff around like enhancing the storage visibility. They've done a lot of vSAN enhancements. So I think like in this new VCF operations kind of dashboard that they've got now, they're really trying to demonstrate the value of the investment in VCF. All right, so like showing total cost of ownership or how you could do things better. There's some tooling in here for like comparison to like cloud hosting. So it's like, hey, you're running it on-prem and it's costing you this, but if you had gone to XYZ cloud, it would cost you this instead.
GCP, perhaps?
Yeah.
Well, probably more if you were going like EC2 or Compute Engine.
Yeah, cloud native, if you're targeting it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. There's some stuff in there for doing chargeback, or at least to demonstrate, like if you had workloads linked to different business units. Now it has support for what they've referred to as monster virtual machines. So if you've got machines that just need an absolute insane amount of CPU, like up to 960 CPU cores, you can assign that to a VM now.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's some pretty big stuff.
I can't imagine a machine that needs 960 CPU cores.
Yeah, but they could imagine, it supports it.
I'm just trying to think what would ever use that many cores. Like
single VM.
Massive Hadoop cluster or something. Like, we're talking petabyte-sized Hadoop cluster.
Yeah, cluster, but it's a single VM. Maybe you're doing a nested cluster.
Maybe it's multiple 960 CPU VMs.
Could be, yeah. There's now like vSAN replication. So they've definitely expanded out vSAN to be, you know, much more like a traditional SAN appliance. So you can actually get some of the, you know, you can have two different environments. You don't just have to use like a stretched cluster or site recovery manager or any other tooling to replicate data, you can actually just pair two vSAN instances and say, okay, well, these data stores need to go across on this time frame. So that's pretty cool. A lot of nice little tweaks. Enhanced security, it's TLS 1.3 through and through on all the APIs. So that's cool. There's live patching as well. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who have who will right now go and have a look at their the life cycle on their ESXi hosts and notice that they've got like 600 days of uptime. They haven't rebooted. Now you can do live patching, so they can do critical security updates. No reboots required on the hosts, so you don't need to move VMs around.
One of the other things that I noticed on VC9 is, or VCF9, I should say, is the Data Services Manager, which gives you the ability to do databases as a service.
I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah,
that is cool.
So there's a link right down the bottom of the blog post about advanced services, and one of them is DB as a service for private cloud, VMware Data Services Manager for VCF9. Mm. And the page there is talking about Microsoft SQL Server as a service is in tech preview. This is really cool. Like, gives you the three big ones, the MySQL, Postgres, SQL Server, the ability to provision, backup, clone, patch, scale, and cluster.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, really cool. So some big developments there from Broadcom.
Yeah, we'll give them some kudos for once.
Yep.
Until we get onto the article later where we're going to bag them.
We'll be bagging, don't worry.
All right, well, with that said, let's get on with the community news. All right, it's the Ian Brown segment. Let's hit it. Let's find out what's going on with GDEs around the country.
It's not really the Ian Brown segment. It's a tribute to all the GDG organisers around the country that do such a fantastic job. But the Google, the GDG AI for Science Australia group, which is a group based in Sydney out of the Google office, are running a JAX Series 1 and 2. So introduction to JAX and JAX AI stack. And the second part is the JAX for combinatorial optimization. Yep, combining stuff. They are co-hosted amongst all of the GDGs around the country. So Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Hobart, Adelaide, Darwin, Perth. There will be one of them running on. So part one is on the 27th of July. And part two is on the 27th of June. And part two is on the 4th of July. So just jump onto your GDG community sites and figure out which one's your closest one and RSVP to that, because that'll be really cool to go to. And then Sydney's cloud meetup. They've got their meetup at the Mantle Group head office in George Street on the 2nd of July at 5:30 p.m. It is showing a sold out, so you can still register for last chance tickets. So get yourself along to that. There'll be a couple of really good talks there. So Elaine Gao, who is ex-Mantle Group, I believe, as well. She's a machine learning engineer coming over to talk about Move Faster with AI. And Cedric Ferry, who's a senior software engineer, is talking about building futuristic Android apps with XR and Gemini. And then last but not least, Melbourne has their June meetup on the 25th, which is in, a week. You can still RSVP to this one. It is still open. There's still tickets available. Again, Mantle Group head office, 6 p.m. And the agenda there is it's just a networking and get-together type. But it's for IO extended.
I'm sure there'll be drinks and nibbles at that as
there
that
always
as well.
Is.
Yep.
That's it.
Fantastic. They sound like some great events around the country. Make sure you get out to those. All right. Well, with that, let's get on with the news items. And And first news item for this week, Google Buyout offers continue to support companies' important work ahead. Google is offering another round of voluntary buyouts to US workers in several divisions, although the exact number isn't publicly known. You know, I'm seeing a lot of stories at the moment of tech people, you know, that have left a job or, you know, been out of work for 5 months and just can't get a new job. What's is this a US thing? What's going on?
Well, it must be. I mean, we don't seem to be having it over here that I can see. I mean, it could be happening over here. I don't know. But yeah, look, this one is, I actually like the way Google's doing this. Instead of just laying off, like, okay, we're just going to lay off 10,000 people. Mm. Let's give them the option to buy out.
Yeah. So a redundancy package, effectively.
Yeah, it's a redundancy package, but it's at their option. So if they don't get the numbers that they want, then they'll start laying people off. But there's a Google executive in this by the name of Nick Fox who said, and he spearheads the K&I division, which is one of the knowledge and information division, which is one of the divisions that is affected. Sent in a memo on Tuesday saying that the buyout is, and in quotes, a supportive exit path for those of you who don't feel aligned with our strategy, don't feel energized by your work, or are having difficulty meeting the expectations of your role. So, you know, if you've suddenly lost the Google glasses, then
you're not feeling the love anymore.
You don't feel the love and all the rest, then off you go.
And this is a way, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. But it's, so it looks like it's going to affect knowledge and information department, engineering, marketing, research, and communications. So all those departments are on the chopping block.
K&I, which houses search, ads, and commerce divisions, comprises 20,000 employees. So, I mean, that's a fair chunk there, right, already?
Oh, yeah.
Certain teams at Google are requiring that remote staff living within 50 miles of an office go back in person as well and work on a hybrid schedule. The company's confirmed that. And then I guess their overall goal is to bring people together in person, according to Mancini. But look, you know, I guess it's a different vibe in the US. I mean, here in Australia, especially with Mantle Group at the moment, you know, I'm working remotely. Most of us are working remotely. It kind of, remote work is better, right? Like, because we've got to get the right type of people in and we don't have them all in one place, right? Like, you can't get that many people, like, all in Sydney or all in Melbourne that have all this unique skill set.
Yeah, that's right.
It might be different in the US, but, you know,
remote work. I sort of understand what they want. There is some suggestion that having people face-to-face in an office breeds better working relationships. But on the flip side of that, if you're a software developer or a systems engineer or in a technical field where you need to concentrate, being in a noise, like I find it, and this is just me, and I know lots of people who listen and you guys are much the same, is if I'm in a noisy office and there's constantly people walking around, I can't concentrate. There's too much noise around.
Yeah.
There's that buzz is there.
Yeah, yeah. It's too much. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. People come up, tap you on the shoulder and it breaks your flow and it's just no good.
And it takes ages to get back in that flow once you've been disrupted from it. It can be really detrimental to work.
It can, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I think there is a value in, you know, being in the same location occasionally. It's like, hey, we got a workshop on. We're going to whiteboard a bunch of stuff. Then we're going to go out for lunch. We'll do some team building stuff. We'll go away. But we're not expecting you to be cranking out, you know, paragraphs of code today. Right. Today is about this thing. Maybe we're going to work through some problems that we're expecting. And then you're going to go back to your little silos.
and then
we're going to implement.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There is... definitely opportunity, and it's one of the things that I really liked about the way Mantle Group worked was you could come into the office every now and then when you wanted to like get off the tools a little bit or just work around other people, or if you wanted to sit down with another engineer in the company and nut through a problem, you could do that, and they didn't stop you. But But I think for the most part, the remote working is a far better prospect for those of us who are technically inclined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And just along with this as well, Microsoft has announced to lay off 3% of its global workforce as well, to streamline operations.
Which is probably a lot more than 20,000.
Probably a lot more than 20,000. So cuts everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you got to free up that budget if you want to start competing for all that AI talent, right?
But Amazon, on the other hand, they're spending some money, and they're spending money in Australia. Amazon boosts Australian investment to $20 billion to meet AI and data demands. Now, this was such a big story. Albo got involved. It was on the commercial news outlets as well. Amazon spending $20 billion over the next 5 years.
Yeah, so I think it was originally going to be about 13. So some of that had already been committed, but I mean, $7 billion in new commitments over the next, you know, the forward forecasts. I mean, as you said, it was enough to get Albo there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't have to go to the G7 dinner, so. Or he didn't get invited to the G7 dinner. I can't remember which one it was.
I think Trump cancelled their plans, but, you know. So this is going to mainly support Amazon's AI initiatives and companies like the big four banks, Telstra, Optus, and a range of other IT service companies, including Atlassian and Canva. So Australia's on the map as far as that's concerned. And I did not know this, but along with this, Amazon will also invest in two new solar farms in Victoria and one in Queensland, and increase from 8 its current investments in and uses. So they've already got 8 solar farms going. They're going to create two new ones to power the things.
Yeah, I mean, thirsty infrastructure. So, I mean, it's great that that they're not just coming in here and being like, okay, well, go ahead and we're going to start sucking up the power. Like, no, you have to actually invest in some of the additional grid capacity as well if you want to run these workloads.
Yeah. It's not like power is not expensive enough already.
Actually, I mean, on that, I saw a very interesting article the other day about power, the regulator who manages power for South Australia, because, you know, like their grid is now almost entirely renewables. And they've started seeing like this big uptick in data center operators and also like heavy industry, but like to do green steel, et cetera. Yeah. They've now had so many inquiries for like industrial connections that if all of them went ahead, it would be 5 times the total of the current grid.
Yep.
Right.
And so the entirety of everything that powers South Australia today, they would need 5 times as much to handle what everyone else wants.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? Obviously they want to come there because they're getting their carbon offsets and they're getting their green energy. If you want to build like an aluminium smelter, then, you know, you got to put the power infrastructure in for it as well.
Mm. Yep.
Pretty easy. And that seems to be the deal they've made with AWS here. So, yeah, right. We'll see. We'll see if Google and Amazon make similar moves. I mean, they're building stuff all the time, but it's good to see the Australia on the map. I've really felt like Australia's on the map lately. You see now about G7, you know, we're talking to Zelensky, all these things, and talking to the EU. Yeah, playing with the big boys at the moment.
It's always nice when we pop out of, you know, the Pacific.
there's a country down there.
No, that doesn't exist. The flat earth has all told you.
That's right.
Austria? Isn't that in Europe?
Anyway, let's get on to something a little more serious. Google broke the internet. And it did not go unnoticed. A major GCP outage affected platforms like Spotify and Discord. We've got some details on it here. It sounds like it was just a fat finger software update.
Yeah, it was. So the update, and I'm just reading straight from the status page here. they've said in the status page that it was a release to the service control binary. So service control is a regional service that has a regional data store that it reads quota and policy information from. The data store metadata gets replicated almost instantly globally and manage quota policies for cloud customers. The code change and binary release went through our region by region rollout, but the code path that failed was never exercised during the rollout, which seems like a bit of a rookie error. And it was. They admit that later on that this was a problem that should never have happened. The change did not have – oh, sorry. The issue came because there was a null value in the data store, and then they changed a policy to prevent the null value from
on
existing.
The code that had never been exercised.
That had never been exercised, and so the code didn't have appropriate error handling, and nor was it feature flagged. So without the error handling, the null pointer crashed the binary, and everything disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And then as each region had this package deployed, it just propagated globally. Yep. And
And the list of regions, when you have a look at the outage, like the status page, it is literally every region in the world.
I think it's quite interesting, though, how it states how the SRE team, they saw and started working on the incident within 2 minutes. They found the root cause within 10 minutes and they were able to commence recovery within 40. However, because some of the very large regions were down, service control just struggled to be able to bring everything back in time. That's why it took a few hours.
Overloaded,
I think it took, so it was the issue was officially recognized on Google's status page at 11:46 Pacific Daylight Savings Time on the 12th of June. And it was showing as resolved as of 11:34 p.m. that same day. So 12 hours.
Yeah. And they've issued what the register calls more than a usual apology. Google has promised to stop repeating the mistakes that led to this outage, as it always does. But this time the company has also promised a couple of operational changes. Namely, they'll improve our external communications, which, I kind of thought that.
Yeah, I thought
it was kind of okay.
Good.
Yeah. Both automated and human. So our customers get more information. They need ASAP to react to the issue, manage the systems and help their customers. We'll ensure our monitoring and communication infrastructure remains operational to serve customers, even when Google Cloud and our primary monitoring products are down, ensuring business continuity.
I think what sort of when Google does have an outage, and it does happen every now and then, the issue that I find is that quite often if an outage happens during the night, because during the night for them, it's during the day for us. So we see it during our business hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the status page is very, very slow. Sometimes it's hours before the status page even recognizes that there was an issue. So,
when the Yanks are impacted?
When the Yanks are impacted, it's like, bang, we've got the update. But I think rollout at night.
But aren't they doing follow the sun operations? So there should be an operations team on this side of the globe.
The sun shines differently.
Oh, I see.
The earth is flat, didn't you know?
So I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I think it's probably due to the quantity or the size of the interruption, right? There's far more people in the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to impact more people and be reacted to quicker. Whereas, with us, it's not the case, right?
I think more than anything, it's going to flag in their systems quicker, because if you impact all of Australia, you will have impacted, 0.1% of Google users.
Mm.
Whereas if you impact all of America, you might be impacting percents, multiple percents, not decimals of a percent.
That's yeah. because the engineers who work at Google get called by their parents saying, my Gmail doesn't work.
I can't log on to the interwebs. What's going on?
All right. Well, let's just agree when Down Detector has, you know, multiple, because if you had a Down Detector at that time, there was multiple things, then, you know, it's either Cloudflare or one of the hypervisors.
Cloudflare did have a good dig at Google about it too.
Oh, they did.
They had a massive dig at Google. It was just. Yeah.
I'm just pleasantly surprised that it wasn't a BGP problem this time.
Or DNS, you know.
Or DNS, yeah.
Oh, it's always DNS.
Speaking of having a dig at Google, Google Wiz deal hit with antitrust probe. $3.2 billion breakup fee on the line.
Yeah, they might really cop this one.
Could hurt, yeah.
Yeah, so the US Department of Justice is reviewing whether the deal would illegally limit competition in the marketplace. This is much the same as the Department of Justice ruled that Google's online search and advertising businesses violated antitrust laws. I feel like the Department of Justice in the US is targeting Google because it is a big player in the market.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you could see why at the moment it's like, okay, if we're already dealing with this investigation because we consider you to be a monopoly in this area and you want to add all these other extra services in, that's going to get extra
attention, yeah.
It just is, right? And especially the scale that we're talking, like there were, like the Wiz acquisition is $32 billion.
Yeah, it will be the biggest acquisition in Google's history.
I mean, you remember when we thought the Mandiant was huge, and that was only $5.3 billion, six times the size. Yeah.
So if the deal gets canned, then Google's on the hook for 10% of that purchase price, which brings it down to $3.2 billion.
Get your money for nothing.
So how does that work then? Because I mean, if the Department of Justice cans the deal and says, no, you're not allowed to do this, how does then Google end up on the hook for that money, even though it's a third party that's interfered?
Yeah, well, you would have thought there would have been some contractor lawyer speak there to prevent that happening.
There'd be some theys and shalls written into the contract somewhere that says that they shouldn't be on the hook for it, I would assume.
Well, I wonder if they consider the DOJ to be a force majeure event, you know.
Yeah, well, they'd possibly.
Act
of God.
Is it in this article?
Department of Justice.
Act of Dodge.
Act of Dodge.
When did they make that deal? Because that, in my mind, that seems like it was a while ago. It was last year, 6 months ago. Easy. Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. So why is it only coming up now?
Wheels of justice grind slowly?
Well, they do. I don't know. I really
can't recall. Can't recall. We'd have to go back through the articles. But, yeah, that's an interesting one. It's only coming up now. But you're right. It's kind of like, oh, they're looking at the books for, you know, the Chrome breakup. And then it's like, oh, and what's this other thing you've got here?
Yeah.
You know?
Hang on. Didn't you just buy Mandiant not that long ago?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you did. Why do you need another cybersecurity thing?
We need the whole set.
Yeah.
We want to collect them all, like Pokemon.
We want to collect the set. It's we put them on our mantelpiece and...
Yeah, Charizard.
All right, well, we'll keep an ear to the ground on that one and see who gets to pay the bills. But during the fortnight, I upgraded my Pixel 8 Pro to Android 16.
I did the same. I haven't noticed any difference.
Yeah, I haven't noticed any. Mind you, I haven't gone digging. But Android 16's out. Go and get it. We have apparently an update to the notification system.
Yep.
Apparently, if you've got things like Uber Eats or like Uber or whatever, in the lock screen now, you get status notifications and way to contact the driver, and the GPS tracking and all that can be integrated into the lock screen, which is cool, I guess.
Material 3 has been postponed, though.
Right.
So Material 3 Expressive Design, which was the new UI style that they had, was supposed to come out with Android 16. but it's been postponed to the QPR 1 release expected in September.
Right. Yeah, I've not noticed any changes to the styling. I'm just having a look at my phone now. It all pretty much looks the same. We've got some advanced protection mode, new security suite called advanced protection mode, built for individuals at risk of cyber threats, such as government officials and journalists. I guess when you do that work profile, there's some extra security features in there.
Bit of cool multitasking stuff if you're on a tablet or a foldable, that'd be cool. Might have to get myself a Google Fold.
Well, you got the Pixel 10s coming out soon. I'm sure you can drop out $3,000 for a Pixel 10 Fold.
I'll trade in my Pixel 9.
And we have AI-powered scam detection in messages in message apps.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's good having that in. I mean, I love on my Pixel phone how much it blocks scam calls coming in. You see all the spam calls all the time. And throws them away. Having that move into like the messages app, ideal. Would have been nice during the last election if we could have blocked all that trumpet spam.
and even our local elections here blocked all the every man and his dog sending me like, this is how you should vote. I don't care. Don't care that much. I did like that they brought in the messages app. They brought in a delete for everyone. So as long as they're using RCS and the current version of RCS chats, then you can delete a message for everybody in the chat, not just you. I can see kids working out ways that they can say stuff to their parents and then delete it so that their parents can't prove that they've said it.
The screenshot
just
that's
gaslighting you.
So a bunch of cool features there. I guess as I only literally just updated it yesterday, so I'm not fully across it, but during the week as I'm using the phone, I'll be able to let you know.
The other one, actually, Banky, you might like this one because I know you sometimes run dual SIMs. Dual SIMs for RCS chats.
Oh, okay.
So you never used to be able to use both SIMs for your chats. Now you can.
Nice. All right, check it out. Make sure you go and get the update. It took a while to install the update when I ran it. It just sat there for ages and then wanted to reboot a couple of times and took quite a while. And when I picked the phone up, it paused the update and it said, we can pause the update and continue when you're not using the phone. I said, all I've done is picked it up and moved it from there to there. I'm not using it. And I put it back down and said, continue update. And it continued it. So, just let it sit there and do what it needs to do. And you'll get Android 16. All right, moving on. A new phenomena that's come out is part of Securitate News. Voice phishing. Hackers exploit phishing to breach corporate data. So voice phishing or vishing in a report released today, Google Threat Intelligence Group identified an advanced threat cluster dubbed UNC 6040, which has repeatedly used voice phishing or vishing to impersonate IT support teams. Now, it doesn't say it, but I can see the day where we take a short voice of someone and then you can totally AI their voice. You can do that now. And there you go. There's your voice impersonation happening and you're doing your vishing attack.
So you can actually do it right now. So you need about 10 seconds of someone's voice.
That's right.
And then you can mimic them entirely.
Yeah. So if you think of like how many people, like if you keep it just to IT folk, right? So not even like the CEO, but just like IT folk that maybe present at a conference, right? Any recording of their voice, and maybe they attend a podcast and they do a session about some interesting project they did, get a big snippet of their voice. Great. Now we can use that, for our nefarious
For whatever reason we want.
Yeah. I mean, I saw, it was a couple of months back, but there was an accountant or a finance person who got, what did they do? They moved, they basically they attended a meeting, a legitimate meeting inside their company, all in Teams, that was entirely attended by AI versions of their CEO and their manager, and they were basically convinced to approve a very large finance transfer.
Mm.
That is elaborate.
Yeah.
That is elaborate.
So this comes back to that, what I was saying before about the new live API with native audio thing. So the ability to mimic someone's voice is currently available in Google's AI suite. Right, their voice AI is phenomenal. This is an unwanted side effect of it being so good. I mean, we had the little laugh the other day about how good the video is out of VO3 versus the original Gemini AI video creation tooling, where it had a video of Will Smith with like six hands trying to eat spaghetti at a million miles an hour or something. And it looked just completely janky. But now it will build out a video that looks completely realistic.
Oh, we're screwed. Totally screwed. Yeah, we're screwed.
The voice component of that is also AI-driven.
Yeah. Go and look up these Stormtrooper vlogs that are coming out. Oh, they're so good.
Oh, they are so good.
It's like, you know, the guy holding up the phone with the selfie walking and going, hey, this is a Death Star, you know, today. This is the canteen. Hey, Bob, how you going, Bob? And we're going to go out on a mission today. It's just like stuff like that. It's picture perfect. It's unreal. It's fan fiction that's been created. And that's all VO3. VO3 has kind of an aesthetic to it. You can kind of tell. Mate, like, it's unreal. Like, it's great for that kind of thing, but we're screwed. We're so screwed. You just can't tell reality from fiction now.
Yeah. it's getting a little, it's so good, it's becoming dangerous.
Yeah.
So to the point where I only need 10 seconds of your voice in order to completely clone you, that's where it becomes, you're stepping over the line of this is a cool bit of tech to now this is dangerous.
Mm.
Or it could be dangerous in the wrong hands.
Yep. And
unfortunately, the people with the wrong hands are some of the fastest to embrace.
And they're also some of the most well-funded.
Yeah, and they're the first ones to get hold of it and use it and exploit it.
Yep.
Yeah, unfortunately. And it's very easy to get a hold of.
Yeah.
A few dollars, you've got access to VO3, yeah. All right, well, vishing, yeah, that's be aware of the term, and that's what's going on. But speaking of AI, let's get on with the AI Wars.
AI Wars.
And I didn't know whether to put this story in people in AI Wars, but we needed a couple of AI Wars articles. So here it is. Google names chief AI architect. Google appointed an insider to lead its future AI-powered product development. This is a story on IT News. As AI enters a new phase of mainstream adoption, according to the memo from CEO Pinchai. Now, I'm going to butcher the name here. Korav Kavukuglo. Now, I did practice that before, but I completely forgotten it. Corey, chief executive officer of Google DeepMind AI Lab, is taking on the newly created title of Chief AI Architect. He will become the new senior VP, reporting directly to Pinchai. Interesting move.
Yeah, well, he's moving from London too, over to California. He will also continue serving as Google DeepMind CTO, not CEO, CTO, and report to its CEO, which is Demis Hassabis. So, look, really cool appointment. Sorry, Corey, if we butchered, well, that we butchered your name. It's nothing personal. But yeah, no, congratulations to him.
Now, in this article, it says Google said it would put artificial intelligence into the hand of more web surfers and teased a $249.99 a month subscription for its AI powered users, and it's at its annual AI
$250 a month. No, actually, that's not dollar dues. That's US Freedom Eagles.
US Freedom.
250 Freedom Eagles a month.
Does that give you access to VO3? the unlimited VO3 access, because that could be worthwhile if you're an advertising agency.
You'd want to be making me coffee for $250 a month.
So, yeah, that does give you VO3. It gives you a lot of credits. So,
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I did actually. So we still don't have access to VO3 here, but I did notice that my Gemini now has Imogen 4 enabled. I got that heads up yesterday. Oh, nice. So,
because you got the Pro, you got that old Pro
but
there.
$250 bucks a month is a lot of money. It's a stupendous amount of money.
Not for a business, though.
Per user.
Oh, that's per user, is it? Oh, yeah, that's
a lot. It's to an account. It's not like a, you know, you get your normal Gemini thing for like $50 a month or whatever it costs you. Yeah. That's per user as well. This is also per user.
Yeah, Gemini in Google One to get Gemini Pro is $33 a month.
Yep.
But, you know, you get all your 2 terabytes of storage, you get blah, 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 blah. You get access to VO3 with that as well. Hmm. So, you know, depending on what you're doing, that might be worthwhile.
I think Google's...
But $250 is a bit much. Yeah.
Google's been putting their prices up on everything, because I noticed our YouTube Premium subscription went up to $40 a month now.
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's jumped. I think when we originally signed up, it was $22.99 a month. And now it's $39.99 a month. And we're seriously considering scrapping it, because it's just, for what you're getting, Google still slows it down ad infinitum in my place because I block all the ads.
Yeah.
Even though I'm paying not to have the ads. So I'm just like, you can't double dip here.
I use the music streaming all the time.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm spending it.
I do too. And I love YouTube Music. But I can get Spotify for half the price for the family.
Yeah. Everyone can use it. Yeah.
Yeah, we can deal with the fact that Google's going to slow down our YouTube experience because we've got ad blockers on the network.
Yeah. I just hate the ads on the Samsung TV. Like you watch on your browser and all the ads are blocked, and then you go on your telly with the app and
Pi-hole comes in.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, will it remove the inserted ads though?
Removes all of them. Because you block Google's ad click or whatever it's called, their advertising
network. You just wait until they finish doing their server-side ad injection into the videos directly.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And that's when I'll give up watching YouTube altogether.
But anyway, Google AI Ultra, you can get it now, $205. Dollar dues for the first 3 months. Then it goes up to $410 dues per month for Google AI Ultra. You get Gemini 2.5, of course. Flow, that's the filmmaking thing we talked about. Whisk, 12,500 monthly AI credits across Flow and Whisk. Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail, Docs, Vids and more. And 30 terabytes of storage. So you get a fair whack of storage as well. All right. Chief AI architect moved. Now let's talk about this GCP to provide extra compute for OpenAI. OpenAI turned to Google for help with its growing compute needs.
Yeah.
The move is unexpected, giving the rivalry between the two artificial intelligences.
I love this sentence in it. OpenAI has been working to ease its reliance on Microsoft by adding other cloud providers to meet its growing demand.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, part of Microsoft's investment has been like free compute for them, right? Mm-hmm, so, I can understand them broadening out a little bit. I expect that they probably are just desperately trying to get access to the Ironwood TPUs.
More than likely.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be the technology they're trying to get access to for sure. Yeah.
It says here the company will provide extra computing resources to support OpenAI's AI training and model operations. Comes as ChatGPT continues to challenge Google's core search business. Still, Google executives recently acknowledged that there may be room for more than one winner in the AI space.
Mm. And this is going with what you were saying, Dave. TPUs were once limited to internal projects, but are now being used by outside clients, including Apple and OpenAI competitors, including Anthropic and Safe Superintelligence. So, yeah, you can bet that's what they want to get access to.
Oh, yeah.
Adding OpenAI to its cloud customer list gives Google another way to grow its cloud business, of course, which brought in $43 billion last year, about 12% of Alphabet's total revenue.
Well, so they expect the company's pouring money into AI. It expects its capital spending to reach $75 billion this year.
Oh, it's eye-watering.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of coin.
Yeah, it is truly the AI wars, yeah.
It's astonishing the fire hose of money across the industry that's going into these build-outs.
Yeah.
It is. It's just unfathomable amounts of money. Like Amazon's committing $50 billion in Australia alone. Yep. Google's 20. Expecting to reach $75 billion across the world in AI spending alone. You know, these are numbers that 50 years ago didn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Let alone spending that on computers.
Yeah,
How do you spend that on computers?
SoftBank and Oracle. Spending $500 billion on Stargate infrastructure effort. This is, these numbers are nuts.
Yeah. And then when you think, I mean, it's disposable. I mean, really, it's disposable, right? You spend all that money now. It's not like, you know, I think you think of infrastructure projects, right? So the 60s and 70s, they built roads, right? And power, right? They built all that. 80s and 90s, well, what did we build? We built the internet, right? And now in the new millennia, we're building AI and computing infrastructure, but that is all going to, it's not like roads. Roads kind of stay there. This computing stuff's all going to be junked in about 5 years because there's going to be a new technology come along. It's flabbergasting. It really is.
Yep. Well, we'll see where this leads.
We'll see where this leads. We will. Look, we'll leave it there. It's been a fantastic episode, guys. Chatting you is always fun. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts Writers Review, that'd really help show out. And go to YouTube, start the discussion there, and smash that like button while you're at it. You can contact the show, contact@gcbbytes.com.au, and you can find us on the web, www.gcbbytes.com.au. And of course, as per usual, the sponsors for today were High Tech Solutions, thank Dave, and Mantle Group. That's the mob that I work for. That's about it from us. Anything else from you guys?
No, great fortnight. I'll see you in a
cold,
freezy
room.
we're going to miss you, Ian.
Yeah, enjoy your trip, Ian, and we'll see you later. Bye.
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 I can't say I've actually ever bought anything from M-Wave.
I definitely have, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, years back when it was hard to get graphics cards, and it was like, just everyone. I started buying things from every company.
No, I tend to use PC Case Gear. I tend to use PC Case Gear, yeah.
Jason, like, because PC Case Gear is down here. Like, they're not that far from where I live. So, you know, for a long time, you could just go there. They stopped doing pickups for a while, but I think it's back now.